like a 1 hour bag session without timer.
Yeah.
And just work through.
Just flow, yeah.
That's it, that's the word. That's the word, flow.
Yeah.
You know what I like about the word flow as well is if you reverse it, it's warm. Backwards.
Yeah, I think you love it last time.
Get my feet loosened up, ready for bag work. Like, it just seems so limited now, being in one stance.
Yeah. You've been opened up to.
I have so many more options if I can switch my stance.
Yeah.
And ways of cutting people off. Like, if someone steps there, instead of me pivoting to face them,
yeah,
I can just step through.
Boom, and then I've already cut them off. Yeah, you've shaved off.
Yeah. Have you always been really active, even as a kid?
Yeah, I was always climbing. And my parents said I was upside down more than I was right around. And I always used to spin on my knee, just one knee to Billie Jean. Like, that's where it started, just like
spinning on one knee,
and then I discovered.
Would that be walkout music then?
Not quite. I've been inspired some inner kid, but that's a massive question. What would be the walkout music?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ponder on that. We'll return to.
Return to that one. Yeah. Yeah, I was always climbing everything, just physically, just look. And I've realised as I get older, more and more, like how people try to solve stuff with like. So many different ways, and I think if you fix the body, everything, all happiness or depression comes from the body being having issues, inflammation, joint problems, and we just miss it. We don't, you know, Bruce Lee said was obvious to us, but the mind and how connected the mind and body are.
Look at your feet, Wesley.
And so people try and solve stuff. Like meditation and all that. People are like, just meditation is great. But if you can't sit cross-legged in the way the body's designed for a long period of time, it's going to be way less fun. If you could sit cross-legged and feel no, and be weightless, because you know how it would feel, yeah, yeah. Right? It would be weightless when your spine's aligned, your hips, everything. It'd be weightless. Then you could get into that blissful place, boom, into meditation. But if you're trying to sit there and you're hunched shoulder and your body's giving these signs, it's like, okay, fix. The body, fix the spine, and then we'll come to that. We'll revisit, is everything in the order, you know? So my goal has never been just chase the meditation, the samsara, the nirvana, you know? It's just, first I got to undo everything society's done, or I've done to myself being raised in this culture, with my body training parkour without awareness of proper posture and hammering these, I've got stiff ankles from jumping loads, but without alignment, right? Yeah. Landing loads without alignment. So, okay, I did that mindlessly. Now it's my chance to go back, appreciate everything I've done and sort of smooth it all out and come and just undo all the damage from my mindless younger years and then revisit being a human on this earth and what actually it is to explore here with the body I'm supposed to have, because so many adults just accept ill health and injuries as part of getting old or whatever, and I've just refused to just accept it. Like I'm going to keep working on it even if it takes me to my grave. Like I want to solve this myself, for others. I like when other people solve it, you know. But it's the body is just the key to joy and experiencing this planet, and we all know that it's not material things. So the more hours you can spend doing something with that, you know. Do you play instruments?
You know what? No, I don't. I own guitars, and every time I think about starting to learn, I buy a new one, and then I don't get anywhere. I used to sing. I used to be in bands. I was in punk bands and I was in a Rage Against the Machine cover band for a while.
Yeah, sick. You know. Wow.
So not really a musician, but
I bet you've got a massive love of music as well. Yeah.
I'll have to show you my record collection.
Yeah.
To come over and talk to me today. Yeah. These are all things I need to get on.
Because then you're recovering from the physical shit as well.
Yeah.
But your brain's training.
Uh-huh.
And our brain's capacity to learn language and music is very wired. But I've never mastered another language. And I've never mastered an instrument. But there's a joy for a human to have those things. And they complement the physical stuff because it's a chance for you to rest and recover.
Yeah.
Because recovery is the main game of all these athletes. Like, that's what it's becoming as the more and more money's invested in this stuff. So. It gives you a chance to recover while your brain's still training. And then I also do an app called Lumosity, which is brain training games, like little fun memory games.
Yeah, yeah. You should try Elevate. That's
what Elevate, is that a good one? Sick.
And you know the ones I like? I like things like Mahjong, just for my...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just
great
to
game.
Get my eyes
match
work,
those things,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like that, and it gives you... It's just so well structured, so you get levels that are at your difficulty, and there's like a train game with different tracks running, and the train's running out, and you've got to match them to their stations, and... But so you're aware, attention's on all these different things at once, and it's just I'm like, fuck, my brain's not had that kind of workout in a long time. Yeah. Obviously, martial arts will give it to you a massive degree, but then you can be training it outside of that. For me, I haven't had it. So it's like, to do 2 hours a day of like, just scrubbing the brain, giving it something to fucking work on. It's like, oh, thank you, Tim. Like, our capacity, if we're not fulfilling our capacity, we feel depressed. We feel like we're missing out on something, so.
Yeah. Yeah, Laird Hamilton was talking about that on Rogan's podcast.
Oh, really?
He was just saying, you know, the reason people aren't sleeping enough and those kind of things because they're not tired enough. Like, they're not out and doing stuff.
It's so true.
Here's a question for you then. Do you do anything in your week that you don't want to do? Because you seem to kind of just spend your days doing the things that you want to do that are going to build you and feed you.
Well, that's the weird bit is like, I've done many weeks of doing everything I want to do. It doesn't satisfy you.
No.
But I haven't got to.
Is there anything in your week that you wake up and you're like, oh, fuck, I don't want to do that today?
No. But I enjoy life more when I have those things.
It's the weird balance. Yeah.
When I do those things and then when you get home after, you're like, oh, fuck, that life's extra good when you don't have them. But that's why, though, I had to take myself to school and do these stuff.
Right.
Because it's not like, you know, it's sitting in there fucking sounding like a twat and it's going to go on for years. Like, trying to play guitar, trying to learn a language, you know. It's not that enjoyable in the moment. The end process is when you enjoy it. So it's about putting time in, or is it work? Pay now or pay later.
That kind of thing. Pay now, pay later.
So I'm just...
Someone at cruise.
Yeah, putting myself through school. It isn't that fun in the moment, but, you know... And it's the same with all the rehab stuff. It's not that fun to just be doing the basic stuff at home.
Yeah.
Straight me low back. You want to be out training and playing and stuff. But I don't know, there's something in it for longevity of life, enjoyment of life. Why not put in a few years of learning? I'm 31, right? School ruined learning for me. I don't want to... You come out of school not wanting to learn shit.
Yeah.
It took me about 13 years to recover from that process. I want to learn again and realise I can teach myself, and especially with the beauty of technology these days, is you've got these amazingly well-made programmes to teach us languages, to teach us music, and to strengthen our brain or to whatever. And I've not been able to play video games in a long time because I just couldn't get... I feel like I'm wasting life. Like, I can't get... I know it is training you in some way, but it's... I feel like that time spent there could be spent working on my body, working on something else.
It's not realistic, though. I mean, the amount of hours I've spent playing Assassin's Creed, and I still look at the church up the road and think to myself, there's no way I can run up the side of that wall. And the problem now is that games have started to tell you how much time you've spent
playing.
138 hours. I'm like, oh, shit. To I make you feel guilty. Another language
Get that on your phone, though, as well, your screen time.
Yeah, I can't be doing that.
Just to give
that's
you
a
guilt.
Bit of reality.
Yeah, well, guilt's not a nice thing for. You know what I mean? It's unless it's fueling you, it's just horrible. But.
How'd you keep yourself on track?
It just.
Do you fall off? Do you have a day where you're like, oh, shit.
Oh, man, I had amazing.
Donuts and friends.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. I go off. But, yeah, I've started to embrace those more, you know. I've started to have to plan those in. Because it's coming back on track that feels so good every time. And that's what keeps you fueled. You know, every time you get back on track, you know, like 3-4 days in. You know, oh, yeah, that's where I used to be. This is who I am. And then that remembrance feels good every time. So sometimes I go out.
Right.
Like last weekend, I went down to a friend's farm who has, like, a pole dance studio for just... little party blowout, drinking next day on a horse and cart, doing a pub crawl on a horse and cart. Like last, and I was like,
I saw a photo of that. Did you have a coffee?
Yeah, a coffee on the back, outside the pub. We did hit 5 pubs on a horse and cart. There's no drink limit.
Right.
So my mate's clocked it. He's got all these horses and he collects carts. It's sick little farm. And you have to come next time, bro.
Yeah,
it feels sick.
And so what's your relationship with alcohol then? Do you drink?
Occasionally, yeah.
Have you always? Or was the point
no.
where you took that out?
I've never had a problem with it, so I've never said I don't drink, but I've just never like gone seeking it. But I look at things that our ancestors did, and alcohol's been around with us for years. So of all the things that are around today, that it goes lower to the list of avoid that. Do you know what I mean? Cause I feel like we've been around it for years, and Do you have a?
I don't, you see. I stopped drinking when I was 17.
Oh, cool.
And I haven't had a drink since.
Yeah.
20 years now.
Man, I respect that. Like, this
the thing is,
doesn't benefit you.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I did it in the beginning. I did it because the environment I was in, the group of friends I had, it was there was no way I could not drink tonight.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
So I had to completely stop just so they knew that there was a boundary there, so they couldn't just keep buying me. You're going to take your shoes off there, aren't you?
Yeah. We just make sure, like, you're like, what am I doing? Walking.
Are we taking shoes off then? Is that what we're doing?
I think so. Yeah. All right,
I'll join the party.
Yeah, cool.
It's turning some kind of Louis Theroux weekend show, but that's all right.
Yeah. So you're saying to you, all your mates would be drinking. Well, you was in Nottingham at this time.
Yeah. So just, I mean, like, it was a, like, culturally, it was a big part of our friendship group. And I had a couple of years where I just went crazy, you know.
Mm.
Loads of gigs, loads of rock clubs, loads of fighting, you know. I mean, half my amateur career was at school and in rock clubs.
Was it?
Yeah, I was always scrapping at it. Oh. And that was another thing as well with the alcohol is...
Well, actually, planned fights in rock clubs?
No, not planned.
Masvidal style.
Circumstantial.
Circumstantial. Okay, yeah.
I was the guy that always stuck up for everybody.
Sick.
You know what I mean? So if ever there was any issue, I was always the guy.
Before you trained it, like?
No, I was training regularly as well. And I think that was why I kind of...
Good little test.
Well, I went from being sort of like a chubby 14-year-old that was doing Taekwondo regularly, but just had this like excess of body fat, which I didn't know where it came from, I couldn't do anything about it, is what it felt like at the time. Then 14, 15, I started to really tidy up my diet. And by the time I was 16, I was like...
Oh, you was on it early.
Yeah. But I was competing in Taekwondo.
Okay.
You know.
Who was your guidance for that then? Your father or your coach?
Well, my Taekwondo teacher really, Mick Rowley, the guy that built my rig in my house.
Yeah.
He was the main person that I was spending most of my time with. Plus my grandfather, he started Taekwondo when he was 60.
Mm.
So the 60 to 65, those years when I was probably kind of drifted off and started hanging out with my friends and I had some anchor in Taekwondo, which was my granddad that kept me there, which was awesome.
Oh, sick.
And then Mick Rowley, although he was a Taekwondo instructor, his mind was completely open to combat sports. So I always joke that instead of doing Taekwondo, we always used to do mixed martial arts.
You said it to...
Yeah, because he used to do everything.
It,
Mick, I just said Mix because his name was Mick Rowley.
Oh, Mix Martial Art. With it, yeah.
We used to, I mean, we were hitting pads, we were grappling on mats.
That was his way of training, yeah?
We just did everything.
Oh, you're doing it anyway.
Yeah, we just did everything. Yeah. And then, you know, he would lend me Bruce Lee books and he would, you know, he would give me tapes to watch.
Yeah.
I just consumed everything and he just fed my mind constantly. So I ended up with this real addiction that led me to travel around different gyms in Nottingham, and I did Wing Chun for a while, then I did Thai boxing, then I did Jiu Jitsu, and I just started adding everything in. It was like I was like hungry for it.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get enough.
Can I ask how much you study Bruce Lee?
Oh, I've got every one of his books that I know that he's put out.
Really?
I
haven't looked into him enough, but I feel like there's a real genius there.
You see my tattoo, right?
No. Oh yeah, you got it. Sick. His was the things in training that you learned from him. He's like
changed my way of thinking. Changed, and even now there are things that he says that he said in his movies that I was I used to watch Enter the Dragon every morning before school. It was the tape that was in the player that I would just put on while I was getting ready.
Yeah.
So I have just absorbed the philosophy from that movie.
Yeah.
And like even now there are still things that. Like a moment, and I'll have a light bulb moment, and something will connect with a thing that he said in the movie.
Mm.
Like a fight's like a small play played seriously.
Yeah.
And he talks about, you know, when my opponent contracts, I expand, and when he expands, I contract. And he talks about what's the highest technique you have? To have no technique was his reply.
Yeah. Someone quoted that recently. I remember hearing. Yeah.
I think it might have been on my Twitter.
Oh, was
actually.
It on your? Yeah. Yeah.
Because it clicked all of a sudden. Like the highest technique is to have no technique.
Yeah.
Technique is limited to a circumstance and a particular scenario.
It's a program, isn't it? A reaction to this, to that. So it's still a process. So it's not seamless.
That's it.
Yeah.
So if to have no technique means that everything is reactive and efficient in the moment, regardless of what the moment is.
Yeah.
There's a flexibility to it, which you can't have with technique.
Yeah, okay.
Which is what I was talking about earlier with Henry Cejudo.
Yeah.
In moments where he would normally lose the takedown after two and three attempts in the same scramble, he has a third and fourth to stitch on the end of it, which people aren't expecting.
Yeah.
And that adaptability, I think, is that next level of technique.
Yeah.
So, right. I mean, I've just... I just absorbed everything I could of Bruce Lee.
His other stuff was like isometric holds and stuff, right?
Yeah, he did a lot of that
stuff. A lot of that stuff. There's not that much. People don't do that much to that.
Have you not like, looked at any of his books then?
I've not looked deep enough into him. I've seen one which said roughly talked about his training and running a mile every day and stuff like that. And like,
okay, there's a book. Well, there's one book in particular which I carried everywhere with me.
It's Warrior. There's one called Warrior.
It's called The Art of Expressing the Human Body.
Oh, okay, that sounds.
I think I might have two copies of it actually, so I'll grab it.
Bro, grab it for you. Cool, man.
But it breaks down. Basically, it was a compilation of all of his notes for training. So he didn't put it together himself. It was after his death. It was everything that was left. They put it all together. So sketches.
Yeah.
And these photos of him doing particular training routines. Yeah. And
that's another thing, by the way, drawing. Do you draw? Yeah,
I do draw.
You do? Oh, wicked.
Because I bought an iPad recently.
Oh, cool.
I've been sketching on
that. Oh, jeez.
Yeah. The amount of times I've dropped that on the floor of a bus falling asleep on the way to the train.
Yeah. What you see a lot is people, research something and then put it on YouTube within a day, right? Uh-huh. Whereas back in the day, to have a voice that people listen to, you had to spend years in an industry and earn it. So now you're getting these YouTube because they're saying what people agree with, but it doesn't make it. They've not earned those positions of authority, and they're spreading a message that's reflective of their own imbalances, because the balance you have is what you bring into the world at all points, right? For all celebrities, so however imbalanced they are, you've got to look at that first. But sad. But yeah, so I'm just working on myself. I think it could be many more years.
See, I've got a book that I've had in the works for a while.
Have you? Yeah. Well, another one, yeah?
Well, I've got a few. I've got sort of four that are in the works.
Yeah.
But there's one in particular that I think would be quite interesting, and I think you writing something similar would be really interesting as well. Mine's going to be called My Pet Reptile.
So it's on the theme of the one that you already...
Yeah, but it's basically a book to myself when I was coming into like my teenage years, when I was going from being a child to, you know, kind of becoming a teenager, and like the wisdom that I could impart to myself.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, to help others.
Yeah, and like
do you write down notes and like?
I've got kind of a rough structure of what I want to do with it, but like. With all of the transitions and phases you've been through, obviously all that was educational for you, but there must be a point where you go, right, this is the bit, that's what you need to know from all of the experience that I've had. So start there when you're 20 instead of when you're 35, 40.
Yeah, I feel like I'm closer to that point, but I don't think I've found that. Well, if I'm on that point, it's very new to me.
Right.
So... I've done so much research with the body and myself, and nutrition being a massive one to explore, but then spirituality and making selfless choices and selfish choices and everything. But yeah, I think when you find it, the answers are within. And it's just not how many of us are spending time with ourselves, like you. You know, I remember you were one of the first few people on London Real talking about your mushroom journeys. That inspired me. Like, this is how we got to be warriors of this century, is like, of this generation, is to face those moments by ourselves, to go out into nature on your own, to have these things and, let yourself, and almost that is letting go of control, right? Like, we're so... And that's the bravery of letting go of control, and then, you know, that's... Death is the last thing we can't control. There's the fear. So... You're facing your own death to free yourself for life, right?
So where are you with death, then?
We'll find out. That one's wobbly, eh? Oi.
Kung Fu Monkey.
Yeah.
That's what you need to do. It kind of crosses over to what we were talking about earlier with the meditation thing and, you know, looking after the body first.
Yeah.
Because like initially when monks started exercising, it was because their bodies were deteriorating because they were sitting for hours in meditation.
Oh, okay.
So that's when they started to do like strengthening exercises, and then they started to study the animals fighting around them.
Yeah.
Then there became a necessity to start protecting the temples, so they learnt fighting styles from the animals.
Ah.
And so that's why you have like tiger style, crane, snake, monkey.
Yeah.
And they're all somewhat ill, go that way.
Do you learn this from a mixture of kung fu movies and teachers?
Yeah. I mean, I've obviously learnt the idea of it and the background of it from a lot of movies.
Yeah.
But then...
you looked into it more.
Yeah, then studying at different kung fu schools and stuff. And then,
to see what's reality was, actually. Yeah.
But it's a very stylized way of fighting. And I think a lot of the time, if it was working, it was because one of the two people in the transaction was fighting with some kind of direction.
Yeah.
And the other person they were fighting against probably wasn't. And that's a bit of a strange way of breaking it down.
Yeah.
But if you put one of those monks against a modern-day MMA fighter,
it might
be the spinning axe kick that catches you in the head, but generally you'll shut it down.
The ninja.
You're making a velociraptor.
Yeah, raptor, yeah.
I'm not inspired to. I've done so many where I just like put them out because I feel like I should be doing something, but I'm really trying to trust right now, and it just feels like I'm not in the mood for creation. Right. Do you know what I mean? And that's how we really would work. The modern age is made as like you have to create every day, but nature's got seasons for a reason, and any great musician, go away, album, comes, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Come back and they follow the season. The ones, they all lose it when they're forced to do albums from their label. And then it's not in the season of their creation and inspiration, right? So I'm not inspired to create, so I'll wait for it to come naturally, and I think it comes when you get your body or mind to the right place, and then it's like, now's the time. I mean, there is two sides to it, because of course just hard work fucking pays off and you can just keep cracking stuff out, so it depends where you're going, but it gives you more chill time. You know, like work hard, like really fucking hard, like I'm sure you did when you went to America, and then come back and chill, develop, and then come back hard again and just and take the inspiration from each trip.
I always felt like I was in like a gathering phase.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of absorbing. Gathering.
Yeah.
Harvesting.
Yeah. Following that. So I say I'm gathering, not harvesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, gathering would be, I guess that's sort of after the harvest. Hey, was that? No, that's in between. It's the.
Well, sometimes you're harvesting because the relationships that you've developed and built with different
people. So you've always got stuff coming in, yeah.
So, people that are accessible to me, that share information with me and, are invested in my growth.
Yeah.
They're people that I feel like I invest in that relationship and make sure I know that they're appreciated, and then
cool.
I can go and gather whatever information and knowledge they've got for me.
Oh, sick. Yeah, I get you've got some good people to tap into, and you've got to have the hardest part of having your own eye in it yourself, and you have that pass to be front line to anything you want. So it's like, and because you have appreciation and understanding, it's like, what a beautiful view of the front of a creation of the development of this of mixed martial arts, isn't it? It's
like
whatever you can take into your life, man. It's like. I actually got into UFC through Joe Rogan. I'm probably one of them stories.
Is that right?
Because he was interesting enough, and I enjoyed his commentary on it. And I remember watching it, and then I remember, I think the first fight I ever watched was Rampage versus Rashad Evans.
Right.
I was in America at the time. I watched it with my mates who lived there and were into it. And then I did actually watch your fight in 2002.
All right.
And there was years between...
Is that the one where I got chin?
Yeah, you got chin. Yeah. Didn't want to mention it.
Happens. It's all right.
Yeah.
We're not sensitive.
Yeah, true. You can. Yeah. Yeah. So then it took years before that, and then really getting into it again through Joe. And then it was Ariel Helwani, literally his show. Ariel Helwani to me is a massive part of growth of MMA.
Really?
Because he just made it so accessible, and he loved the stories and was passionate and being the guy getting the stories out.
And he's that keep cranking scattergun approach as well. He does so much.
So he's that exactly.
He always hits the mark because he's hitting.
He just finessed it, and he's got the stamina for it. Like
yeah.
But then Luke. Then it's interesting. I watched MMA Hour for years. He left. And Luke came in.
Yeah.
And I watched more MMA fighting. MMA Hour. Shout out Esther and Casey and them whatever. I watched more MMA Hour than I watched ESPN Hour or whatever. Like
right.
Because I don't know. I don't know if it was the way MMA. If it was more natural. It wasn't the TV style. But I think Ariel. For me, he got commercial, and I didn't dislike it because of that. I just lost the love of him that I had, and then I see Luke, and I just Luke's
probably been the biggest voice in my house for the last 2-3 years, like, yeah, that, randomly, that, yeah, people would never really think or know that, but
Luke's really good.
He's really that middle ground of, like, he understands enough he's, uh-huh, in it, but then he's equally 50-50 a good pundit, as, you know.
Yeah, he meets analyst and journalist.
Yeah.
Right in the middle.
There, whereas, that's what it is, yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas Ariel's far more journalist. And,
yeah.
And, you know,
which is great, you need
which
that.
Is, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But it's like, there's a sensitivity to the way that Luke goes about things that Ariel doesn't, and I think that's why, for me, yeah, he's easier to
yeah.
I enjoy talking to Luke as well. He's, yeah, we can always have a good conversation.
I bet. And what he's doing now is he's separating himself so that he can, I think he's going to be coming with some heat, you know.
Yeah.
Because he was doing all the, like, his interview with Aziz. So from that,
yeah,
stuff, I think he wants to do more of that, but because he's under the guise of someone else's thing, he couldn't jeopardise that. So, mm-hmm, now he's left. He did the one about his UFC and Monopoly. Like, he's really trying to lose his pass if he's not lost it already. You know what I mean? But he's not afraid to do it, to speak, yeah, the truth. And he's actually, he could help the union happen out of anyone with his voice if the fighters... I don't know how you feel, I can ask you that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Because you're obviously, you know, with the UFC, but...
Yeah, but at the same time, I always say this, I work for MMA.
Yeah.
I'm here for the sport of MMA, and, you know, the UFC sees the benefit in having me around, and,
yeah,
knows that I'm invested in the sport more than anything else.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I think a union will be a good idea. I do. And I think eventually we'll get there.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the dream solution that everyone thinks it is.
Yeah, cause, yeah.
Because it's not. I mean,
there will still be its own issues, but at least, yeah, I think that you're empowering the athletes because they don't really have a choice right now. They're taking the...
No, but at the same time, there's, like, by giving the athletes more of a choice, then we run into the problems that boxing's had, where you've got the sport that's entirely fractured.
Mm.
And unless it's organised so, you know, like, there are divisions and people work up and down the divisions. That's, see, for me, a union would be less about protecting the fighters and more about adding some kind of structure so people know the direction that the sport goes and the money flows.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, like the yeah, higher up the hierarchy you are, the more money you should get. So, like, if you're a main event...
I agree with that, you know? But, yeah, but you want a lot more visible, structured, like, planned-out method that's, yeah, methodical rather than just, we like you, we don't like you.
That's it, yeah, that's, yeah, it. And, you know, like a... The rankings need sorting out because no one really knows who does that at the moment. Yeah. I've never met anyone that contributes to the rankings.
Yeah.
I would also like to see more of a descending structure for fighters. So, yeah, like, if I'm a young fighter right now, I know I'll get experience at amateur, so I can, yeah, do IMAF. Then I go over to Cage Warriors,
yeah,
win a Cage Warriors title, then get signed to the UFC.
Yeah.
But then if I get to the UFC and I hit my ceiling, or I'm not ready for the UFC. Yeah. Then you just kind of get released into the wild.
Yeah.
Whereas what we need to do really is we need to go, yeah, right, okay, well, you've had 2 fights in the UFC, it's not worked out for you right now.
Yeah.
Go back to Cage Warriors,
okay,
or go back to
structure
such
where
and
you
such.
Could do that and then not just, exactly, kill you, okay, yeah. A little more structure.
Yeah, that's it. And then you've got someone that's fought in the UFC that's not been successful, that's either going to be a stepping stone for someone else coming up,
mm-hmm,
or to be able to hold their level in, say, Cage Warriors and continue to progress until they are ready for UFC stage.
Yeah, I guess, like, that would be more like a league in a way. Like,
yeah.
Actually make a league system. I wonder if they'd do it, because I guess all other sports have a league system. Maybe that's definitely what they're angling, isn't it?
We just can't go down the boxing route where everything just gets messy.
Yeah.
And it's all politics and people, yeah, aren't fighting each other. And, you know.
Yeah. Heavyweight's exciting, though.
It is. It, like, is at the moment. But that's only because we've got a couple of wild cards.
Yeah.
It's not like the sport could be structured to be interesting, but it's not.
Who's the British guy that just won the other day? Daniel Dubois.
Yeah.
Enter the mix, Daniel Dubois, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Another heavyweight, please. Like,
I'm a bit out of touch with the boxing at the moment. I,
yeah,
just kind of catch glimpses of it, snippets.
Okay.
Especially because there's so much MMA going on.
There's so much MMA, yeah. It is in a way, it's more organic of nature's path right now, in a way that, like, uh-huh, the strongest tree will rise to the top and get the most light and the others will die off. That's like a Connor or someone who's come through and demanded what they're worth.
Yes.
If you put a structure in place, it'd be harder. Roboticizing again, you know what I mean? In a way, actually, now it's a bit more beautiful in the way that it is more organic, but then humans go, that's not fair because of X, Y, Z. We try to create what's fair and what's not fair. So we need structure to protect other people who may not be as fortunate.
Yeah.
And then you're taking away survival of the fittest, which is, you know, I'm not for that, but I'm just saying that's what actually exists right now, and like, yeah, a union would take away that. Just to be.
Yeah. It would. And the other thing as well is, like, this is prize fighting. You know, it's prize fighting. You don't deserve anything. No, yeah, one deserves anything in the game. Like, you, yeah, fight for everything. People, yeah, forget that.
Real hustle.
So, like, and like, the thing is with Connor invested in himself. He backed himself.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of this. And I could have done it more in my career, looking back. But I'm doing it now in my life.
Yeah.
Like, investing myself, backing myself.
Yeah, yeah,
that,
yeah,
was the reason that Lorenzo and Dana liked him so much, is because, mm, like, he would have a fight,
mm,
he would then go up to him and say, right, I want to fight this guy on this day, and this is how it's going to finish, and I'll put 50 grand on it.
Yeah.
Or whatever. So then, like, jeez, they liked his confidence.
Yeah.
So then they're like, all right, this kid's investing in himself, yeah, then we'll invest.
His confidence to the end. Like, I'd never seen someone believe in themselves to where you really felt it as much as him, right?
Yeah.
Like, I bet on McGregor Mayweather.
Did you?
£1,000 on McGregor. He made me believe, and it was worth every penny. Because what he's done for me is worth every penny, because I've never seen someone, and people don't like him, but he is the most evidence we have of law of attraction in, yes, modern society, and in the material realm, in like a social realm, right?
Yes.
He's the number one, like, that I, for my perspective realm of where I look in the world. And so it's nice to see that come. And if he actually beat Mayweather, that would have been a real turning point, you know, like in actually, like.
Yeah.
People like him, and again, Jorge Masvidal is another. You want to see someone like him win, for me, at the time he was coming up, because it showed evidence of that in a way, mm-hmm, of law of attraction. But it was a subtlety. It's not just saying I'm going to win, because everyone says they're going to win. It's the belief, and then it's coupled with doing the work.
Yeah.
No one can say he didn't work. Like, and I think him versus Aldo, that was the peak moment at featherweight, right? 145.
Yeah.
Ido Portal was the missing ingredient from him in everything since then. In not everything since then, right? Obviously. But imagine, you know, in like sprinting, it comes down to the 0.2% or whatever, the final thing. Right, so you got something pretty pure in martial arts. It's coming down to the percentages at the highest end. And when you're training with Ido like he was, that no one else was, you are sharpening, you are maximizing those percentages on the end.
So what do you think that added to his game then as a martial artist? Because it's kind of interesting, because
the body, I think it added, I think it gave him sharpened his tools.
Okay.
And so the mind is one thing, you're understanding the game, but he sped everything, sharpened everything else. I think Ido gave him that, because it's mobility and it's brain patterns and speed, right? So it's like the two things, you can focus on fighting all you want, but if you step it, working on the tool that fights, right? The people work on their engine, their cardio, they work on their strength, but it's actually the little thing, right? That I think Ido does. That's my belief on it anyway, that's what I think. And then with Khabib, as he said in the Tony Robbins thing, he was listening to that external chatter, he lost, stopped listening to his. When he started training loads of takedown defense, that's because he listened to someone else. And he never did that before. He only focused on sharpening his strengths before. Next minute he's listening to other people's things, training the takedown defense, and he's like, I wouldn't do that next time, I'd just focus on my strengths again. And I reckon he'd get Ido in again, and he'd remember that was part of the medicine that made the magic moment, right? And
so what's the development from Ido Portal for MMA then, do you think?
Yeah,
like, what can you take that he's doing and expand upon it to make it more MMA specific, more combat specific? We're trying to build the ultimate combat animal.
Yeah, I think his stuff, it strengthens the little muscles that you don't get strengthened just in everyday practice, because it's in the squat position, because you're playing games and with balance, because you're playing this stuff. So it's strengthened. I remember in a Joe Rogan podcast, I can't remember who he mentioned, but he was mentioning that he talked to someone outside of the show, they weren't on the show, but he said, what will develop MMA to the next level? He said, foot strength.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this coach, I think it was Dos Anjos' coach.
Oh, okay.
Might have been. But he said foot strength and toe strength, and it's like, yeah, those are the stuff we're not playing. And it's partly, you know, you think, what are we doing? A lot of MMA fighters, especially in Florida, Miami, they're driving on flat to a gym to train. They're not getting their external outside. They're not. Not that it's made them any worse. This isn't a judgment of how good or bad something is, but, you know, the barefoot in nature, walking up mountains, doing all the little human things, squatting, gardening, whatever. That we miss, that I think Ido just gives people back into the day.
Yeah, you're sceptical of Udo then?
No, I'm not. I'm not sceptical of him necessarily.
I just don't think he makes that much of it. Maybe
he's just he kind of became a bit of an in joke in MMA.
Yeah.
And I'm always interested to see what the people think about him.
Yes.
Yeah. Why? How would you have it?
I just wonder.
Yeah, I think so. It feels like it naturally holds it.
You're opposite side to me, are you? I'm the right hand.
Yeah, we've got different ones on top.
That's interesting,
yeah. I do, in yoga, that's... Because with yoga, the cues are like between... Like, it's one thing to do the stretch, but then it's also listening to what they're actually saying. Mm-hmm. And often, when you're doing Bikram or whatever, like, right, second, when you do the second set, swap your fingers over, mm-hmm. don't they? So it's like those little cues.
Yeah, and the one under the chin.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it still feels odd.
Yeah.
Switching over.
It does feel odd, doesn't it? Yeah. So you're the other, so you're left-handed then? You are?
No, I'm right-handed. You're not? I'm left-footed though.
Oh, interesting. My left is more dominant, but I'm right-handed. Huh. Like it's stronger. So maybe that's it.
Yeah, I could definitely fall asleep in that position.
Major's pillow.
Maybe I'll have to give it a go.
Have a lie down.
Yeah.
Find that it's quite...
I fall asleep in all kinds of places. Do you? In this house. That's one nice thing about this house.
Yeah, every room's like, got its own energy to...
Yeah.
It's like the Radiohead video, isn't it? Yeah. Nice, just drop the ribs a little bit. Drop the ribs a tiny bit, yeah. But keep the chest puffed, but try and drop. Just like, that's big straight, yeah. And put your shoulders forward a little bit so you can, let's see. Yeah, you can tuck this a little tiny bit more. Try and push out and flatten that bit. So.
Yeah, that's the bit I struggle with. Yeah. Feels like my hips are really far forward.
Does it? Yeah, they can get.
My lower spine's really flexible.
It's almost flat, but it's just, you can go flush from your coccyx to here, you can go flush, like that. But it's not far, but that's the bit you want to work on, it's that hip tuck. Can you sort of suck in and up in the stomach? Like in and up, yeah. Yeah, and keeping all this sat like you are. And then try and hold that lock, and then breathe through the nose and keep it. And you try and keep your breath stopped. Don't lift your stomach, but try and breathe into your ribs and into your back here by holding the stomach in. So. So the ribs rise and drop.
Oh,
yeah.
My front has to breathe.
It's just playing with this stuff, yeah. But that's better. It's just trying to find this in training, but obviously it's a tough one because you are almost going right back to the start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are
yeah. But yeah, I used to carry them around with all the time. Just grab them on my backpack and just start doing just like little tricks like that.
Spin them right yeah, yeah.
Back of my hand. And what was the other one I used to do? Yeah, this is too long. It needs a shorter. Needs a shorter chain. Fun to play with though, you know what I mean? But not particularly useful.
But it's brain games for
yeah.
Keep your shot.
Uh-huh.
And then you just sit on the ball. And you just sort of push through, maybe a bit more resistance. But because you're activating the hamstring with the push and you can really fight, because it's hard to get that spot, isn't it? Yeah. Have you ever tried on the ball? Especially
I sit on the box sometimes with the ball and just extensions.
Yeah, you already do it, basically.
I've not seen that.
It just gives a little more feedback to activate it, because we've done physically demanding stuff, our muscles need a bit more resistance than just the air sometimes to get a little deeper.
I don't use bands as much. I warm up my shoulders and stuff with them.
Do you?
I always think they're going to twang my face and give me a big red stripe across my face.
Yeah. It seemed like a useful tool though.
Yeah.
I always think for what in nature, I always think there's a way to solve everything with what's around us in nature. And so that's not something that I've played with too much yet, but I'm starting to see its uses. But
yeah,
like, those aren't that natural, but often I'll just find like a hard floor that's really good for.
Yeah, you were talking about that last time.
Yeah.
You were like, this like natural massage.
On the ankles and stuff, yeah, the myofascial release I was getting from just the hard floor. So it's like, that would have been fine. And even, trees, we'd sit on trees and stuff, so we'd get, because we sit on a soft surface, we have no natural, we'd normally get a massage there. Might not feel like a normal massage, but if you're sitting on a tree branch at a funny angle, you're going to get a good little, it's going to open that part of your hamstring up, so maybe that's how we're meant to,
yeah,
that bit's become tight because it's not usual. We sit in a comfortable chair.
Mm-hmm. You know what? My little dog, she leans on all kinds of awkward, weird shit.
Is it?
Just stretching out. I'm thinking, why there? Why did you pick that spot to lean? And she's like crooked across something, yeah. Laying across like my arm or the phone or.
Yeah.
It's weird. But there may be something to it. Maybe I need to start sleeping on the floor.
Yeah. Because our habit to go up is just to lean forward and do that. Mm-hmm. But if you use the muscles like that, yeah, then you stop waking up the hamstrings, of course.
Shit starts cracking,
but that's a good awakening. There's two types of cracking. There's the cracking that you do every day that's just that little release that feels good, but you know it's not healthy in the long run. Then there's awakening crackings, which don't normally happen. Like you might be stretching this ankle and this elbow, you'll hear a crack, or the hip. And it's an awakening, and it could even be in the ankle. But there's a feeling where it feels like it's never cracked that way before, and it's the muscle fibers are actually doing something good. There's nuances. I don't know if you might notice anyway. Just the nuances in the cracks. Just listen.
Not as much as you know.
Yeah, I'd say listen to them because sometimes a good stretch will give you a good one.
Yeah.
And then.
So you were talking earlier about you do stuff in the morning, like mobilization stuff in the morning.
Yeah.
What kind of stuff's that? Because I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Something that always stuck in my head, we were talking about old kung fu movies.
Yeah.
There was a Jackie Chan movie called Meals on Wheels, and it was...
Seen it, yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, where he's got the van.
Uh-huh.
And they're roller skating. And
that's it. And they wake up in the morning, and they both go through this, like,
routine.
Routine of, yeah. Like, leg lifts and all that kind, yeah. Of stuff. And
I was exaggerating.
Yeah. But I always thought to myself, as a martial artist, should I be getting up in the morning and warming up in case I have to fight off a gang of attackers on that day?
Yeah.
Like, why do you do it? Do you do it just to kind of... Like, wake up, is it routine?
That's my first test in the day when I wake up, is like, if I wake up and a part of my body's stiff, I've done something wrong. If I'm waking up and it feels light and loose, like, I think a lot of us rely too much on our warm-up to push for injuries, which is a perfectly good tool, but if you want longevity, that's not the route. If you're pushing through injuries, solving the injury, and then you still have to warm up a bit, but I think... Some people have to warm up loads because they've got injuries before they can start moving, and I think that's the key factor. Children don't warm up. Not to say we're ever going to can always be at a child's level, but they don't have to warm up, and they've got fully mobile bodies. So if you work on having a functioning body, then you should wake up out of bed and your body's awake. Now, if I do wake up and there's a few stiffnesses, then that's when you play. Squirming would be my best definition.
Squirming. Is that before you get out of bed?
No, I get out of bed. Right. But I don't...
Do you do anything before you get out of bed?
I stay awake for a bit.
Yeah.
I don't just wake up and I'm like, I have to get up. I don't have a rule like that. And maybe, I don't know if that is laziness, but that's all right. Like, maybe that's a healthy habit. So you slowly wake your mind up to think about things. Occasionally check my phone. That's one thing. Sometimes I put my phone in the other room, but I do it. And then sometimes I'm like, yeah, it's okay to check my phone. I check if I'm feeling guilty for it. I almost want to do it until the point where I don't feel guilty, and then I let it go. Do you know what I mean? Because we straight away, when you get into correcting yourself, you can be too much on correcting yourself that you're never really living, and you're too much in this guilt phase of, I know I shouldn't do that, so therefore, but you're still doing it. How about you do it without the guilt, and then some things melt away, some things maybe it's...
You analyse everything, don't you?
yeah.
Why is that? Why do you think that is? What were you like as a kid?
Oh...
Were you like that as a kid? Were you like everything you need to... You must have been asking questions all the time as a kid. Or were you just quiet and in your own head trying to figure stuff out?
I'm quite mathematical. I like maths. I enjoyed maths a lot. But I did a lot more with my body. I think I have to be this analytical to get... The source of joy is a healthy body, I think, for most humans, right? So I have to be analytical and use my mind to get to optimum health. Because why would you not want to be optimum? And there is, obviously there's no perfect, but I know that I'm progressing, and I know I'm applying myself, and I'm trying things, and not everything works, but I don't get knocked back. I keep trying something else, and so the health of my body is, that's the ultimate truth, and that for me is worship. That's what God gave you. If you can, and it's a beautiful relationship, because when you look after it, you feel alive, and then you're living with that energy, that worship, bringing that to the earth, like. You know, kids running in fields and stuff, and it's like the game that I've been blessed with is I was never in a sport that was that competitive. So I think, and that's the Jackie Chan, Bruce Lee, the there's always the purest form and the competition form, but I think you do need a bit of both of everything. But we can get so stuck in competition as the source of our validation rather than having the outside. And you see people that validate themselves without the competition end up doing the best often anyway, because they're not as dependent or attached. But it works both ways, because people use it as fuel, and you see it work where they're not motivated by the competition. Like Anderson Silva, I feel like he dropped off because he spiritually moved on from martial arts, but he's just still playing out that role, you know. And I do wonder sometimes if there is a spiritual evolution of a martial artist, and you see them go through it and then their motivations change, and it's whether they can, nothing's ever right or wrong, so it's just whether they've found the right inspiration or justification for them to fight, rather than just, you know, well, there's no right or wrong, but they can do it for the money, they can want it to because they want to rekindle a feeling they once had, or they can find a new motivation to be a champion with a different, and you see how people have different motivation and come back and become champion again. Although on that was an interesting question I thought the other day. Who is the last fighter to lose a belt and come back and regain it? Apart from DC, who is different weight, or if your head can go to that right now. Sorry if it's a...
I guess GSP.
But he didn't never lost his belt. So is there anyone that's true. Is there anyone that's lost a belt and come... I can't actually think of anyone.
Well, I mean, yeah, GSP lost to Matt Serra.
Okay, and then won it...
And then won it back straight away.
Cool. Okay, so that would be it then. So he's probably the last one. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, there must be someone else. I can't think. Is this sounding all right?
Yeah.
Is it? Wicked. Yeah. These mics are quite good.
They're good, yeah.
It's a little distant, but it's all good.
That's all right. Yeah. Well, people can see we're a distance from the mics.
You think there's someone more recent than that? Because I reckon there isn't.
I don't know. I can't think.
It's just not really, like, Kane didn't come back and do it. Mm-mm. Woodley's not come back yet. Connor's not come back. Holloway's not lost it.
No.
Khabib's not lost
DJ
it.
Left.
DJ left, yeah.
I think DJ would have been probably the best chance of winning the belt back.
So who else actually has got the chance? Stipe. That's why I came to the question, Stipe. Because he's the... Mm. I thought, could he be...
Yeah, I didn't win it back then, did he?
So I think he could... He's an opportunity for this rare thing to happen, I think.
Yeah.
And
so do you think
I think Cormier's going to win. But I won't doubt Stipe, because he's a very sovereign individual, isn't he?
Uh-huh.
He stuck to his guns, and he annoyed me, but he was right to do so. Do you know what I mean?
Right to annoy you.
Yeah, he was right. Well, he's right to make the choice he did and sit out for the title shot again, and he got it.
Yeah.
And I can't be mad at him for it. And I was just. You know.
Who are your favourites to watch?
Obviously Jorge, but he's...
Scrap that. Let's go back to that. Who's got the best awareness of their own body?
I think it's Connor.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, yeah.
Anybody else close?
Hernandez looks pretty good. I think the karate specialists are generally have the most awareness, but then whether they've got the jiu-jitsu and the wrestling background. But
like
then
Machida, what about Machida? What about BJ Penn?
I wasn't in it enough when he was at his prime, just to give a fair opinion. But I don't think he's close to Conor's. It's the little things. There was a build-up to the Mayweather fight when Conor was walking up the stairs in the PI, and just seeing him walk upstairs was like, yep, he knows. It's those things where I see it in an athlete. No,
it's posture right.
Posture right, yeah.
But like an ape.
He's a bit like an ape, but he's using his glutes to walk up. He's not like slumped over and just rocking like that. He's like taking a step, using the big muscles to walk rather than the little calves. He's using it because that's what he's either coming to the awareness himself or through Ido or people around him.
Let's do that. It's a smart thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
We try and do the smart thing.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying stretching. Oh, here we go. Now Slim's going to fiddle with knobs. There we go. Your morning routine, tell me about that. So what do you do?
So I slept on the floor the last two nights because I'm back to that habit and I feel better doing that.
On the floor, on carpet or on a mat or
to
on nails?
What's the name of the mat? I completely forgot. The Japanese tatami mat.
Oh, okay.
I've got the tatami mat and then I've got my meditation thing that you put under the meditation pillow, and I have the meditation because that's better material than the tatami mat. And that's like three quarters, so I sleep on that. Pillow, yoga, blanket, and then I'll wake up with the sunlight about 6, and I'll close my window because I sleep with my window open, but then I can hear the cars at that time. And I'll open the key in a tiny bit and I'll lie on my bed. So I'll lie on my bed in the morning and get that little... and I'll doze in a bit and out for about an hour, and then I just come into the world nice after that. So it's like a warm-up into the day. That's the warm-up before the warm-up before the warm-up. And then I'll walk about, have a bit of water, move the body, sometimes go for a walk. And then, yeah, then I'll start... The last few weeks I've been rolling out, doing myofascia release before yoga. So I'll do my rolling out, then go to yoga. And I'm very intrigued with myofascia release because I've been on and off it. It seems like you do need to use the muscle you've just... If you release sort of the fibres by pushing on it, it's only temporary. So you have to sort of use that in strength, in a stretch, preferably in strength, shortly after you've rolled on it. If you just foam roll and then go to work, it's going to do absolutely nothing, basically. Right. So I've been doing that, following the functional patterns thing, and doing that before yoga. So it's been like applying an hour of that into yoga, and it's been transferring. It'd be more intelligent to just do it, like I say, an individual body part, then stretch it, individual body part, stretch it. But for the sake of where my pattern's at, I do an hour of that, an hour of yoga, and it seems to work pretty well at the moment. And then come back, I'll eat breakfast. I've been on and off with intermittent fasting, but some days if I feel like it before yoga, I feel hungry, I'll cook something. And if I don't feel hungry, I'll go to yoga and eat after. But that's been an interesting one, because intermittent fasting is very popular at the moment. And I'm not so sure, and I think 2 meals a day makes sense to me, like a breakfast and a late lunch, or early dinner, eating at like between 4 and 5. So like an 11 o'clock meal and a 5 o'clock meal, I feel like that works best for me anyway. And then I might have something lighter later in the evening. But if it's so easy to push that last meal to like 7, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, mm-hmm. sometimes, and you're having your full main meal because you've sort of been doing other stuff, keeping yourself busy, it's sometimes good to stop, have that meal a bit earlier in the evening, then do some more stuff to let that settle. And then if you want something later, just a little treat later.
So what time are you going to bed then?
10:30.
Okay. See, I'm like 3 o'clock.
You're like 3 o'clock.
3 a.m.
I've been missing that though. That's a nice feeling sometimes when you need to go back and forth.
They're my hours, midnight to 3 a.m.
When no one else is plugged in.
No one else is plugged in. Yeah. Everywhere's silent. The world's silent. I've got my gym.
Yeah.
I'm in my boxer shorts, my underwear, got my candles lit, got some nice calm electronic music playing, nothing opinionated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no voices.
No voices, nothing.
That's important, yeah.
And I'm just in my space. And then I'll do a lot of like mobilization stuff. But I do a lot of that stuff in the evenings.
That's what I'm going to do next week, or later on, late afternoon, evening. Right. I'm going to start doing, because in the afternoon I do, as I was saying before, my class on the iPad, language, music, brain training. I'm going to do that before yoga and see if waking my mind up first before the physical has a different effect. And then do the yoga in the evening or something.
Yeah.
And maybe a swim in the afternoon, a run or whatever.
Yeah. Where do you swim? Do you swim in like in a pool or do you swim outdoors?
I just found a quarry. Someone messaged me, said there's a full moon swim and yoga at this quarry Friday night. And it's a quarry that's owned by some random dude, Ian, that was there. And it's got so much magnesium in the water. It used to fuel a spa like hundreds of years ago. There was a spa further in the town, like where people used to heal themselves apparently because the water quality was so good.
Mm.
And so in like 1900, they blew up the bottom of this quarry. That it was a hill and they got down, blew it up, and it ended up breaking the spring that used to feed the spa, and it all flooded into this quarry. So it's this fresh spring water that's at the break was 150 feet down, but the actual water comes from about 1,000 feet down. And the levels of it, there's zero nitrates in it. And I was there, and the guy that owns it got us some glasses and pulled out this quarry water, and we drank it, and it just looks so pure and tastes. And so it's 40 minutes away in Tamworth, and it's open every day of the week. On Thursdays, Fridays, it opens at 1 in the afternoon, and there's a 400-metre lap that's marked out, and so triathletes and that go.
No way.
But I'm going to start going once or twice a week.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
I must check that out.
Do you swim?
Well, I kind of.
I don't really swim, but I can survive, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not like a Ross Edgley kind of...
Oh, yeah. What?
Yeah,
I can swim.
I could swim before I could walk. Yeah. My granddad made sure of that.
Oh, cool.
Because my grandma could never swim, and he was sick of rescuing her on Lila out at sea when she'd fallen asleep. So, he made sure I could swim. So I love being in the water. I always did. But I just don't like swimming in pools anymore.
That's what I was searching. So if you want to go,
apparently
there's like 25 parts per milligrams per litre or whatever of magnesium, and that's what they reckon
the people back in the day used to, they didn't know what it was in it, but they just knew that it healed people. Right. And so I had a little smoke before that, went for a, did swam one 400 meter lap and then did the yoga on the hill. And my body felt like the best, like the freest it's felt as an adult.
Really?
And I was like, dang, that water did something. And then I found out afterwards it had the magnesium and stuff. I didn't know that before, but I just felt like good.
Mm.
And obviously it's like a bit colder. It's in nature. There's all the little things. My mate I was with was like, mentioned grounding. I was like, yeah, it's the ultimate. We can ground like we did bare feet in the grass, but actually dunking your body in water is the real like ground. You know?
Yeah. So. I'm all about the sea.
Yeah.
I'm all about the sea. If I'm close enough to the sea at any point, as soon as I arrive somewhere, it doesn't matter what time it is, I go,
you go in,
put my feet in the sea. I just can't put my feet in the sea. Like I'm back.
Yeah.
I'm back.
Feel it. That's wicked, man. Yeah, I guess you must, with your sailing and that, you must be able to swim.
Was wild. You know, yeah, that was wild. A lot of fun, though.
Do you think there's something in the air as well? Like with sea air, like there's just a little bit of salt in the air. It's like...
Maybe. I mean, the thing, what was interesting, before we went on the boat, everyone was talking about how you've got to, like, keep, like, you've got to wash your, like, constantly keep washing yourself in like, like fresh water, constantly keep taking the salt off your body and like moisturizing so your skin doesn't crack and that kind of stuff. And I was like, fuck that.
That does sound a bit
like. So I basically got on the boat and just washed in seawater for the month.
And you were fine.
I was fine.
Really?
I was fine. It was amazing. I didn't shave. I didn't wash my hair or anything. I just a bucket off the back of the boat when it was still enough, which was like once a week, you know. And I just put and I just washed in seawater and it was amazing. The one thing I didn't do, the one thing I didn't do was get off the boat on the Equator. I just wanted to be in the sea, knowing that there was miles of water below me.
Yeah,
just to deal with that fear,
actually, and feeling that small and like
that insignificant.
Yeah,
yeah. I did get that feeling a lot on the boat though, because you can see the earth in every direction, and you just there's nothing. Like you can go like 2-3 days without even seeing another boat.
That's mad, isn't it? Yeah, you're really just remote.
Yeah, and the skies, there's no light pollution.
Imagine doing that on your own, bro.
Oh, dude.
Like,
I took weed with me.
Did you?
Yeah, I took weed with me.
Good or bad idea?
Amazing.
Amazing
idea. But I waited for a couple of weeks when I got in the boat just to kind of get my bearings and get into a routine.
So you were smart with it? You didn't just get first night? Yeah, because you put yourself out?
Like. Yeah, no. I think I took like 3 joints and then I took a little bit of ground up weed and like a one-hitter.
Okay.
I thought that'll be enough.
Where did you leave from? England or from?
We left from St. Catherine's Dock in London.
Oh, sick.
Sailed down the Thames and then out around the coast, past the White Cliffs, and then out into the sea. It was incredible. But like that, like within a week, when you're out in like in deep sea and you just don't see anything, occasionally you'll see like a big cargo ship on the horizon or something like that.
Closest.
And there's like sea life. There's like turtles just floating around just in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Dolphins would follow the boat for a couple of hours, and it was amazing. I mean, there was a lot of downtime, a lot of time just sitting, thinking, which is really what I wanted out of it. And also facing that fear of like being away from land.
You've got to face that.
But about 2 weeks in, I thought to myself, right, I'll have a little smoke now. And it was a late at night. And you know you know the scene in what's the movie? Life of Pi, where he's slapping the water and you see all the phosphorescence and stuff.
Is that the one? I'm thinking of the one with the tiger.
That's the one. Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
You know when he's slapping the water and it's all glowing and stuff like that at the back of the boat it's amazing to watch. I used to just stand and stare at it.
Yeah.
Because the boat,
every time it touches it, it comes.
Water, it's just.
Yeah.
It looks like magic.
Yeah.
It literally looks like magic. It's really
beautiful.
Weird.
Yeah. I've seen that in Puerto Rico once.
Really?
Yeah. At night rowing. Like, so you smoked and you saw that.
Yeah, I was on the back of the boat and I just crouched down behind the helm and I just had a little smoke and I just sat there for a minute and looked at the stars. Shooting stars are like so regular as well when there's no light pollution.
Wow.
And that's going on. And then these dolphins swimming around the boat. And And then because the boat's on an angle a lot of the time when you're traveling at speed.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd like climbed up to the top side and I was just like sitting on the rail on the back. Just like...
feeling it.
Like, feeling like fucking Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Living the good life.
Yeah, Jesus.
It was amazing, yeah.
Yeah, probably smart then to wait a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
To do it. Then you know your spaces and you can just add to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rather than just blowing yourself out.
Yeah, that was it.
Wicked.
And then as we cross the equator, as you cross the equator, you go from being a polywog to a shellback. It's like an ancient maritime ritual. where if you cross the equator on a sailboat without the aid of motor,
okay,
you become one of Neptune's sons.
Oh,
and it's like sick. It's like a rite of passage for sailors.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, so you've done that. So wherever you go, you're now.
I'm a shellback.
A shellback. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So we did this. There was this like ceremony where they're like, you know, the skipper dressed up as Neptune.
You did a ceremony.
And threw food at us, and it was kind
he
of.
He knew it, or it was.
No, I mean it's a regular thing. Like they do it. They do it on every boat.
Yeah.
But I had a little ceremony of my own. At the point we crossed the equator, we were looking on the, you know, on the readout, so we can see exactly where we are geographically.
Yeah.
And they were like, right, we're crossing the equator now. And I had a little pipe with a one hit, and I just went, and just threw the pipe overboard. It's a little wooden pipe. Like,
floating now.
Yep. That's it. That's good. It was amazing. It was an amazing experience.
Wow.
But yeah, couple of near-death experiences that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah,
powerful. And that's beautiful that you seek that though for yourself.
Yeah,
because that same character you take into martial arts can take to any field that you explore. And I think you look at people like Cerrone and that do that, and it's sick that you've done that as well.
I think it's just a mindset thing, and you know, I think you recognise it in other people when they've got it as well.
Mm.
You know, and you connect with those people. You know, like Ross is another good one, and you know, we've
explored many fields.
Yeah, and he's just able to. Whatever it is they choose to do, they apply themselves and they manifest it into existence.
Yeah, if it's because it's their path and they've intuitively found that path, or they've listened to that intuition for them.
Mm.
It's because it's finding the right sport, isn't it, for some athletes?
Yeah.
So if you think like heavyweight, there's not, or even heavyweight, there's not that many athletes there because they all go to basketball or football, don't they?
Yeah.
Then you get the Jones coming through, and then like Walt Harris looked good.
What do you reckon of Chris Hardy?
Greg
Hardy.
Yeah, the other Hardy.
Yeah, yeah. So Chris Hardy. My neighbour's called Chris Hardy.
We chose against Hardy though.
Oh, did you?
You did.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I felt like he might get caught on the way in because he can be quite reckless. And Juan Adams seemed to just have a bit of patience in the fights that I've seen him until the time's right.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Greg. We had a great conversation when I was at ATT. I think he's.
Because some pundits really don't like him, but you.
Yes, I know, but he. I mean,
you can forgive the past if.
I think sometimes you have to. I think there are certain things that you know, and people's moral line stands wherever it does, based on whatever life experiences they've had.
Mm.
And there are certain things that for me are across the line, and once somebody's done a particular thing, there isn't a forgiveness. You know, there are circumstances and. There was something I always remember sticking out from the Book of the Samurai, and it's one of the books that I always go back to, and I need to read it again so I can get the quotes right, because I always butcher them. But it's talking about trusting someone that's erred one time because they've experienced that and they've gone through that and they've learned from it, as opposed to someone that hasn't had that experience.
Even been through it, yeah.
And I just think the way that he's been conducting himself, like in his post-fight interview, like with the trash talking that he was getting from one hand.
He was quite respectful. He did play it well, yeah.
I mean, I think that's a reflection of the character that he's trying to put forward, where he's at.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
And his experience as a professional athlete.
Yeah.
Which is what that experience you take to every aspect of your life then. So he's brought that from,
And I think there's something to be said for, you know, being a high level athlete in one sport and, you know, expecting a certain amount of, I don't know what, like money and. Looking after
when you enter something different,
but like he's living in the dorms at ATT, like literally, like in a box room that's as big as this car
from his where he's been before. That's been pretty sick. That
just
is
living in there, just studying. It's like he's like a monk,
is he? Yes, Hardy.
So, I had a couple of good conversations with him out at ATT.
And so, do you think
he'll develop into a really good fighter?
Yeah,
I mean, he's immensely powerful and he's a good athlete and he's huge.
And he's
the first person you see when you walk in the gym.
Yeah, he's that big. Yeah, did he weigh in at 266?
Sometimes
him and I think him and Juan both weighed 266, and that's what I was saying about heavyweight athletes. Sorry, so you got people like him that are actually you getting some athletes at heavyweight now.
Yeah,
and then
So what's your weight class then?
Yours, I think.
You reckon welterweight? Yeah.
Sorry, no.
55.
Yeah.
What's you walking around at?
About 180.
Okay. You're about 180.
175, 180.
We're about around the same weight, though. I mean, I've got less quality muscle mass than you. I've got a bit more softness, but
yeah, you got good.
I'm working on it.
That's all good, man. But you've got the frame, a bigger frame.
Yes,
for sure.
Slightly.
So I think I could cut to 55.
So what would you fight, walk out to and be? That was something we were discussing on the walk.
The song. Right now I want to say like Souls of Mischief 93 Till Infinity. That's super chill.
I don't know that.
It's like a hip hop song from...
Is that right?
You know, yeah. Although it might be too chill, I don't know. So,
I'm going to find it right now.
Yeah.
Souls of Mischief.
Yeah. It's so chill. I've that was my... it'd be a title fight, so I'll start with that one and then I'll think of a harder tune to come in with.
What music did you listen to when you were growing up?
When I got into breakdancing, this was I always said this would be my funeral song.
So what's the song? What's the song called?
93 Till Infinity.
Oh, it's the top song. It's their best one.
Yeah.
That's another good recommendation I've had. I've been building like the ultimate hip hop playlist.
Have you?
I've been listening to quite a bit recently, so I'll add this. And I'll take any recommendations from anybody that's got any. Tweet them at me.
There we go.
You recommended it's not hip hop, but a thousand mods. Yeah, I've not heard of
thousand
that. Thousand mods.
Mods. Oh,
so I'm gonna give them a listen later. Yeah. 93 Till Infinity.
Yeah, you got it. This is Tajay of the Mighty Souls of Mischief Crew. I'm chilling with my man Festo, yeah. My man A Plus, and my man Bolt. You know he's here. And right now, you know, we're just maxing in the studio. We're hailing from East Oakland, California, and sometimes it gets a little hectic out there. But right now, you know, we love you and how we just chill. Yeah. Down the 7 digits, call us Richard.
Nice.
Super chill. Yeah, you'd be in a
situation.
Probably not to a fight Khabib.
No.
Yeah. Well, you got a.
You need something a bit more fired up for that.
Although maybe that's the wrong thing. No, just that. That's that. Thing. Yeah.
This is nice. I learned early on that you can't listen to something too heavy.
Because that's you get emotional then.
I was just, dude. My first two fights. My first one, I just sprinted to the cage.
Yeah.
And I like within a round and a half, I'd gassed myself out.
Because you just had that.
So this is good.
Make us dance with the theater.
Nice.
We in the crowd. The cinema.
I'll show you what
it's
I...
It's mediocre. Take it to the crib so
I'll show
I can
you what I came out to.
The skin's when I hit.
If I can find it.
Because my man... Oh, that. Oh, there we that. Go. From 93 till.
Yeah, this is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I came out to this, which was... far too heavy.
What, one of your first face the pain, fucking anything like that, is it? Oh, you fucking pumped. Yeah.
I was fired up, I went wild, it was too much. It was too much. So I soon switched it to, like, I came out to Martha and the Vandellas a few times.
Okay, what's that?
Nowhere to Run. You'll know that.
Well, I know it, yeah.
Yeah. Nowhere to Run to, baby, nowhere to hide. It was a bit tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah. Coming for you. Good.
It worked out perfectly.
That's a bit more chill as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a vibe, man.
Right?
Yeah.
Perfect. And then if I was feeling like a bad man, and I was feeling like I had a tough guy training camp and I was going to fuck this guy up, I'd come out to Kano.
Kano.
P's and Q's
or something.
P's and Q's, yeah. That was the track. Right? This was when Paul Daly was having an influence on me.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We were coming out to fucking wreck people. It was a weird mentality we were in. I'm into Kano. Well, I've been listening to a lot of that new Chasing Status album.
Oh, I've seen you listening to him, yeah.
Dude, it's good.
Yeah, it's I used
to, it's taking me back to my old school Thai boxing days because we used to listen to a lot of like jungle and dub.
Oh, sick. So it was like that.
And this,
one of my favourite albums of all time, or it was for a period, I completely forgot the name, but their album, do you remember their older albums? Literally must have been 15 years, 12 years ago. It was all drum and liquid drum and bass. They changed their style a bit.
Who's that?
Chasing Status.
I've listened to some of their old stuff, but I've not gone back so far.
It's a different... I think it's probably quite a different... But it's liquid drum and bass, but I'd have to listen to the new one. But
really?
It's so fucking good.
Like, their new one, Return to Jungle.
Yeah, did they sample someone, you said? I think I've seen you...
They've used a load of people that you'd recognise. Like a load of the old school... load of the old school dub.
Oh, really?
Jungle artists.
I thought you mentioned they sampled someone's... meant someone from an interview, or like, was it Masvidal or something?
Oh, yeah. That's a different thing.
Oh, okay.
Like General Levy.
Oh, this is proper like jungle.
Great for training too.
Yeah.
But it's heavier than old school. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a certain fact. We need to put the link up because we mentioned it a couple of times and no one's been able to find it, or a few people have not been able to find it. Saul out of Chasing Status.
Saul, yeah.
He contacted me and he was like, I've done this song and what do you think? And it was just really, really cool.
Yeah.
And it's the whole three piece and the soda and it's Mads Fidel. And I think he actually recorded some stuff into a phone.
Yeah.
And sent it to Brad Pickett, who then passed it on to Saul.
Oh, cool. So yeah, because Brad Pickett, Jorge proper rates Brad Pickett, didn't he?
They're good
he
friends.
He gave him a shout out.
Yeah, they trained together at ATT.
Did they?
Let me see if I can find
Yeah, I always rated them for that. Jorge, give him respect to the real ones.
Yeah.
So there is an actual tune, but it's not out. They just sent it to you.
No, I'll find it and I'll link it up because the Raptors worked on the video a little bit.
Oh, cool.
Saul had an idea and he sent it over and then I passed it on to the Raptors and they had a little bit of a play about with it and sent it back and added a few things to it.
Yeah.
And he posted it up on YouTube. But I'm not sure what he posted it up under. I think it's one of those little
So you were trying to find it.
Yeah, you know what these superstars do. They're like they're
an alias name.
And they're just these, you know, such over producers that they have to fire things out under different names and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'll find it though, it's really good. My water. So what are you doing this week then? We're gonna go up to Kinder Scout, are we? Quite fancy that.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've been up there.
But... Ah, to the Peak District, man. It's a beautiful playground. Yeah. Like, not too far.
Nice. Well, I'll get my van back this week, which will be nice.
Oh, yeah. Mercedes.
Yeah. Rygor is sorting it out for me.
Sick.
It's every day it bugs me.
So what happened? You hit someone?
Yeah. I was driving along and, well, everyone that's already in the podcast is already talking about this.
Oh, yeah.
There was a truck that was sticking out of a lay-by that had not pulled in, like an old big rubbish truck and like a big skip on the back, collecting bottles or something. And I was indicating to turn into the lane next to me and the guy sped up to cut me off, so I swerved to miss him and caught the side.
Ah, so then it's your fault because you're behind, but it wasn't, you got...
Well, the thing is, I just thought I'd clipped the wing mirror. I just thought I'd taken the wing mirror off because it was like a metal bar on the back of the truck.
Ah, okay.
So I just thought I'd taken the wing mirror off, but then I noticed I'd done a bit more damage.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah.
You get that back and then you can cruise.
Well, yeah, I mean, I look like I'm working for Rygor at the moment. I'm driving one of their service vans at the moment.
Oh, okay.
So people keep asking me about car batteries and stuff, and I...
Oh, shit. I could pick you up, either way.
Yeah, well, we'll have the wagon back next
week. Oh, you have it back? Okay, cool. Oh, cool.
Yeah, we'll go up and do some hiking and stuff.
That's an important part of the whole thing, spending time in nature. Without that, you're living in a fake... Well, not fake's definitely the wrong word.
Do you do it every
day? Take that back.
Do you get outside every day?
Most days. Doesn't have to be every day, though.
Does the weather bother you?
Never.
Never?
Never.
Is there a preference?
That's one of the first things, like, to go. I think you've got to let go of weather ever being a factor. It's like, because that's what makes it interesting. That's what adds a variable that's unpredictable, that's out of your control, and we just want the control. But I'd rather be adaptable to all conditions than...
Yeah.
Then choose a condition sometimes. Like.
We were talking about that, what is it, Spartan race or something earlier, and I said that my only problem with that is there's loads of other people there.
Yeah.
And I always used to enjoy running in the rain because I wouldn't see anybody else out.
Yeah.
And it was a bit, in hindsight, there was a bit of an ego thing involved there as well because it kind of fueled the ego of being a fighter.
Yeah.
Because if I went out running on a nice sunny day like this...
Yeah.
And I'd see like those groups of runners out, you know, with their like the fluorescent shit on, all running along with a big smile on their face, and hi, we're all runners.
We're all
and
running,
I'm like, we're not the same. I don't want you to think we're like each other because we're not. So I'd like go and run in the rain and stuff, like hood up, fucking angry. I'm like, nobody else is doing this. I'm earning it. Yeah. I'm earning it more than they are.
But there's a nice part of that is you're seeking a survival scenario, which we don't have. I think. Things like OCD and ADHD, and they're quite different ends, but they're old. What that would manifest as in a survival situation, if we were living without all this controlled environment to make things comfortable, OCD is that. It's like your ability to be on top of things when you're in a survival situation helps you survive more comfortably and for longer. So if you have to make sure, like you said at the sea, you were freshwater washing. Now, that didn't come into being a factor, but if it was, if you started to get cracked skin and stuff, you would have to be on that. Otherwise, things are going to escalate and get worse. Mm-hmm. So things like OCD, or if in that scenario, it's great because you are on things. You're making sure you're surviving, you're protected, you're camouflaged, you're whatever. But when we don't, our minds aren't used for these situations, we get late and you give it a label that you think is negative. Now you've suddenly become, I shouldn't do that. And you feel guilty for just kneading in or whatever the OCD comes manifests as. So it's not a negative thing. Don't see it as a negative thing. See it as a tool that you just need to maybe get into mountaineering or something. Like, I find that the great outlet because you're wild camping. And if you need to do two or three nights with the same one bag that's got all your food and you have to be really calculated, and that feels great. When you're out and you're miles from any road and you know you've got everything on your back, and then that makes you, again, even look to animals and be even more respectful. You know, they don't got no backpack and they're out here. Like, do you know what I mean? We got to carry all this shit, you know? And then actually the process of what is in your bag? What have I chosen as a human? The tools, if I'm going to survive out here for this many days, what is important? Mm. And actually narrowing that down is good to know, because how many people can actually write down what they actually need?
Mm.
Until you get into that stuff, then you go, this is what I actually need. And then you can work on whittling it down from there to being, and then you're starting to enter your potential for this, the brain, for some element of it, you know?
Mm. Yeah. We're definitely the biggest divas of the animal kingdom, aren't we?
Massively.
All the stuff that we require.
Massively. Yeah. And then you look at people like Wim Hof coming through and you're like, okay, so if my mum didn't put me in a hoodie from 1 year old every time it was cold, could I stand the cold a lot better? You know, and it's, who could tell a mother, don't keep your child warm? So I'm not here to say that, but all the comforts we've built up, problems that's the game of undoing, that people like Wim Hof come about and you're like, oh yeah, we can withstand the cold. Now we've got to do all this breathing beforehand. But if we just did it from young, maybe we wouldn't have to do all this, and it would just be a trait that we have without all this work.
Mm. Yeah. Have you read Walden by Henry David?
No, I've heard that's really... I think I've got that book.
You definitely dig it. You definitely.
Does he go out into the woods and live in a cabin?
Yeah. He shed everything. He went out, but it went left... Concord, Massachusetts is where he was living, but in like at the 1890s or
whatever. Okay, yeah.
Like a long while ago. And he just went out and basically lived off exactly what he needed to. And calculated everything and what it cost him. It was fascinating because he wants to find himself in a stage where he didn't owe anybody anything.
Completely sovereign, just to see. Yeah.
And like one of my favourite lines, and again, I always butcher quotes, which is why I try not to use them, but he talks about being born in the open pasture so that they may know with their own eyes the field to which they are drawn to tend, or something like that. It's basically the idea of being born without a burden of an expectation.
Okay.
So like inheriting a farm and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That you, like, once you've got it, you can't get rid of it. Because that's yours to pay off for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And you drive yourself into the soil by doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted to kind of reverse that and go and live on the bare minimum so he had his life that to
experience,
himself.
Yeah. To experience what that would feel like, rare experience. And how did he...
Oh, it's just a fascinating... But I think, I mean, he spent a number of years
positives
out
positives and negatives. And, yeah.
But it's just...
Need some social interaction.
It's fascinating how he documents it. And, it's worth a... I have it on sometimes as an audiobook when I'm training.
That might be a good one. I'll put that on.
Yeah, there's one particular guy, because there's loads of versions. There's one particular guy that reads it, and it's...
Yeah.
I mean, he's got the perfect voice for it. Yeah.
Is that an audible?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. Yeah. I need to get back to reading. I've got stacks of books I need to get through. Do you get much done? Do you get much reading done?
I don't read for months and months, and I never feel guilty, but now I'm reading.
Mm.
And I'm like, sometimes in the afternoon, I'm a bit, you know, that afternoon slump, you like, been had an active morning.
Yeah.
I'll just lie in bed and read, and I'm enjoying it. But then there's times when I don't want to read. I've been like years without reading and been like, yeah, people read books every month, and it's like, and there is no feeling like having a good book.
Yeah,
you remember that chapter of your life when you're like, and sometimes I'll stretch a book out for that reason, so that it lasts like a month of inspiration when you're really into it. You're scared to finish it. Some people race through and finish them. Sometimes I'll slow down towards the end sometimes, which is, you know, either way. But I'm starting to read more, but there's no, it's not a forceful habit. Because And I actually randomly, Luke Thomas also said it as well, and I was like, that's one of the reasons. He doesn't read because he doesn't want his stuff to be influenced by someone else. But, yeah. I mean, again, there's no right or wrong. Like, I want to read that Bruce Lee thing now.
Yeah.
That might influence me, but...
Well, I mean, the thing is that, like, I don't watch any of the analysis stuff for MMA.
Okay, yeah. So it's all your...
I just, yeah.
Which is, yeah. But keeps it pure.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that I won't sit and go through the books in my office. Like, I have a library of martial arts books in my office.
Yeah.
And I've got everything from, like, old school Lao Ga, you know what I mean? Like, all the, like, the power kung fu kind of styles, all the way up to, like, modern day MMA training. And then, you know, stuff mixed in between, more like feudal philosophy and that kind of stuff, just to kind of understand the mentality of a, like, I have a stick fighting for gentlemen book, and, you know what I mean? Just to kind of
that deep. Yeah.
Another thing that fascinates me a lot at the moment is old boxing books. I'm, every time I go in like an old bookshop, an old secondhand bookshop, I always go to the boxing books and see if I can find anything. Because oftentimes you'll see like old schoolboy boxing pamphlets from like 1935.
Yeah.
It's like a little thin book.
Yeah.
And like I look at the postures and how they've changed.
Yeah. You know and there mean? Might be some truth in what they're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. There is. Yeah.
That's smart, man.
Like,
and boxing was like all that was one of the main fighting sports, so they were really committed to analysing it. I bet it was really like.
But it was much more square, much more straight on.
Was
the
it?
Back foot was much more turned forward.
Okay.
And I think that's something that's. I was talking to Ollie Richardson about it the other day, because it's. And we were talking about the collapsed arch.
Mm.
I think a lot of that is down to footwear, stance, yeah. Because, like, especially if you look at wrestling shoes now, like, there's an arch around the, like, the ball of the toe.
Oh, is it?
So if you're wrestling, you can dig in with the side of the foot which is not a natural place to dig in.
Yeah. Oh, so it's like a rock climbing shoe almost.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah.
So they can grip at that angle.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
So it's become
it's
quite
the building
natural.
Muscles in the...
Yeah, I think I, that's why I try not to wear shoes at all when I'm training.
Mm.
But, you know. Sometimes, and this is weird. I wonder if you do anything like this.
Yeah.
And this is maybe a little bit of a psychological crutch, perhaps. But I've done it all the way. I did it all the way through my career. Sometimes I'll play somebody else in training.
Yeah.
So like I'll spend 3 hours watching. You know, I'll watch 2-3 Roy Jones Jr. fights,
yeah.
And I'll watch a couple of documentaries where he's training.
And then you'll. Playing.
And then I'll go and play Roy Jones, and I'll listen to Run DMC, and
yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'll do all the Roy Jones stuff, or like Shane Mosley, if I'm doing a bag session,
yeah.
One of my favourites is to watch Shane Mosley.
Yeah.
He's got this real nice, like, stylized, like, dun, 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 dun. It's just, there's something poetic about the way he moves.
Yeah.
So I'll play, and this sometimes, that's why I've got various different gloves and stuff.
Oh, cool. And I like that.
Shoes. It helps me, like, absorb a bit of somebody else.
Like a vicariously, like
yeah.
Entering them, and you, maybe evoking that spirit. Maybe that's something we did with animals, I guess.
Maybe.
And that we
maybe.
do it with athletes. Fighters. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's.
But
cool.
I do it more now when I'm watching than anything, because I used to like to watch and then mimic, but I think that was more of a way of fueling the training.
Mm.
I was actually doing most of the learning from the watching.
Okay.
So now because I do more watching than training, I'm learning a lot faster.
Oh.
And I'm
cool.
I won't train grappling for 3 or 4 days, but I'll watch, you know, 8 or 10 fights of Jacare's, and then I'm hitting arm triangles in my next training session, even though I've not
practiced them. Just let the brain's been working in the background, just bits trained smarter. Yeah,
yeah,
that's cool.
I think you can do it consciously. I think I do it subconsciously, and I think that's one of the reasons why. That's one of the reasons why I learn like this.
Yeah,
but. When I watch a technique, I don't watch two people doing the technique. I watch the one person doing the technique is me, and I see it from my perspective. So I think in my head, I'm actually going through the technique.
You can feel that because you've got enough of a programmed...
Yeah.
I couldn't watch it and feel it like you can because you've got the program running.
Yeah.
So then when it comes to executing it, yeah, that's cool.
So, and I think the other way is if I'm watching a fight, I can see when someone's injured. I can see when someone's inefficient.
Yeah.
I can see when someone's got a tendency to throw a particular technique because something in their body will change.
Okay. Yeah, you must have a way. Like, I enjoy watching it, but when you, as you do it, your understanding watching a fight must be way more tactical, and like you can see the subtleties and the dummies and what they're setting up and stuff.
Yeah, like I would like to be able to see it without that sometime, just to appreciate it
again. Yeah, like when you first watched it. Yeah,
I remember sitting on a beach one time. I had a load of mushrooms. Mm. I'm sitting on this beach in Malibu, looking out at the surf, and just it was like kind of evening time, and it was making me a bit anxious because it's like shark feeding time.
Yeah,
and these crazy people are still out there amongst these monsters.
Yeah,
and I'm sitting there watching, and then I'm just trying to process the surf from their perspective, because I'm just looking at it like, oh, there's the waves breaking, it's beautiful, it sounds lovely, but they're looking at that like an assault course.
It's way more like action going
on. So much more going on.
Yeah,
like we just walked out my door.
Yeah,
on the way out for our walk.
Yeah,
and I walked down the stairs. I just walked down the steps and walked out the gate as normal. And you parkoured the whole thing. Like, I didn't even look at it like that.
Yeah.
Now I will.
Yeah.
Whether I'll do that or not is a different thing.
But it's good just to do that. It's just, like you say, just to play it out for yourself. How would I do that? What do I see?
Yeah.
Yeah. And work on those things. Because I think those are tools that we do all have as kids. Parkour is definitely one. We have awareness of what can I climb on. Or if at least what you see in children often is they'll try something. Like, I've been told off for being irresponsible before for doing parkour in front of children. Because they're like, my child might see you and try it. But in actual, the way that plays out is the child goes as close to where their fear point tells them, I've not experienced this, and they stop. They might stand on the edge like they're going to backflip, but they won't do the backflip unless they've got some sort of experience in it before, like gymnastics or whatever. That we don't even allow people to get to that stage of standing at the edge of their fear and stopping there. We stop before because I go, when I get there, I won't be able to do the flip, so I'll stop, rather than go, how do I feel when I'm here? And then stop. And I think too often we cut rows off because we don't see the end of it, so, rather than just going, but I'm interested in it, let me go down that path. And then that might steer you to the next thing.
Yeah.
But we just cut it. You know, I see children, they'll climb on the railing and they'll stop where their fear kicks in before they get injured. And I think we've seen too many fail videos that we project onto other people, or we put our fears, I'm a scared to do that, so therefore my kid can't do that, rather than, you know. So that, like I was saying, so parkour is a skill that we all have as kids in more, like, we'll balance on walls and railings. And for me, I've not got the hit, like, I just wonder how much martial arts is wired into us, and I feel like it must be there. Like, some of the times you must be doing jiu-jitsu with a body, and feel like the beauty of every limb to make this game possible, but always have the finest of margins.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 It does feel like there's a beauty in the body that...
They're my favorite moments in martial arts is when you decide you're going to do something, you see how it's going to happen, and then it happens.
Yeah.
And it's so rare that it happens, because there are so many intangibles in MMA. Yeah. In all combat sports, but in MMA particularly, because there are so many layers to it, that when you see Conor McGregor come out against Aldo and do the same back step straight that he was doing in the dressing room,
yeah,
and he wins the fight with it, or you see Masvidal do the circle to jump in knee,
yeah,
you know, like, they're moments where you go, oh, that's real mastery.
Yeah,
that's real mastery. like for me, I have two knockouts in the UFC, and they're two very different knockouts. One was a forced left hook.
Yeah.
And one was a counter left hook.
Yeah.
The counter left hook was because I saw the opportunity in my research, and I knew that he was going to plant heavy on that leg, and he was slow to recoil with his right hand.
So you trained that and then manifested it in the fight.
But my intention in that moment was to catch the right hand as his head was coming forward.
Mm.
And on the fight, as he throws his right hand, I throw mine, but he dips further forward than I was expecting.
Yeah.
So my adaptation then was, as I recoiled, I still know he's heavy on the lead leg, so I caught him on the temple and knocked him out.
Yeah.
My intention, though, was the right hand, so that wasn't quite as satisfying.
Oh, okay.
I appreciate the adaptation in the moment to finish the knockout, and then as soon as he landed, there was a moment where, like, time paused, and I had this little conversation to myself about the kill shot.
Yeah.
And about not going wild and just throwing that barrage of punches and just picking that one clean shot and just sealing the deal.
Yeah.
And I did that in that moment. So there was good things about that.
Yeah.
But then the Ludwig fight, that was something that I'd seen in in my research, yeah. I knew he had a tendency to pull that hand away from his chin if he thought you were moving forward, and I set him up for it. Mm. And in hindsight, it was a good thing he caught me clean with his right hand early in the fight. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been tempted to throw it so
again. Yeah, so it all plays out.
Yeah. But that was a setup. There was something conscious about that I put into play.
Yeah.
That ended up playing out, and they're the best kind of things for me. And I'm only starting to get to that level with jiu-jitsu now, as we were talking about in the kitchen earlier.
Yeah.
Like I turned the corner about 6 months ago, going from understanding the method to understanding the principle of something. So instead of understanding the methodology of controlling a wrist, catching the tricep, pulling the arm past you to then take the back. Mm. I understand the mechanics of what I'm doing to expose the person's back so that I can apply that understanding in so many different scenarios.
Yeah.
Instead of having to be in this position, bring the leg to the outside.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can be in a scramble position and I'll see the arm there and I'll go, right, there it is. And I'll drop into it because I know I can expose the back with that principle.
Understanding the program running behind the manifestation in the physical, helps you.
Yeah,
it's typing. That's the matrix, isn't it?
That's it.
Matrix code.
That's it. And like there are some fighters that have got that level in certain areas, and like we were talking, kind of stands out with that understanding and awareness. There's still a recklessness in some areas of his game, but the understanding of himself and how to apply that ability, is unparalleled, really.
Yeah.
Maybe John Jones is up.
I was going to say John Jones. Yeah. Seems like.
But he has so many natural physical attributes that put him way ahead of people anyway.
Yeah.
It's almost like Conor's far more average in his build and his size and his as opposed to John Jones, who's just so much longer and, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a different, but there's more people with that build taking over the divisions.
There are.
I think.
There are. They're just not as technical as John. But then I thought John was lacking some fundamentals, some basics in his last fight.
Did you actually feel like that?
Yeah.
I heard him say he just does 20 moves in every camp and sticks to those 20 moves.
Yeah.
And I wondered, that sounds smart, because then obviously you're sharp in those, you just focused it. But then, like you said, that maybe that's why it seems like he's lacking.
But I've adopted 20 methods that I'm going to apply in this fight.
Yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily mean that there's a principle underlying in any of those.
No, it's a bit linear, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's there's often fighters, I remember watching fighters and I go, right, he's done too much pad work.
Yeah.
He's done too much pad work with a pad man that loves combinations.
Yeah.
Because they'll start a combination and they'll be throwing it without even being aware of what's coming back in their direction.
Yeah.
And that was quite synonymous with certain camps and certain coaches. And I can see that they all train with that coach because they will have a tendency to do the same thing. You know? Yeah, I'm not
Jackson
naming
anybody. All their fighters, but Jones name. Just dropped off, didn't they?
Yeah.
That's
weird. MMA's so cyclical, though. You know, that camp will come back up at some point.
Yeah. Didn't Pico get Pico went out there, but poor guy. ATT's are definitely top at the moment. It's Amanda Nunes.
There's not enough stuff to climb on there for you, though.
Is it not?
No.
I've played at the Performance Institute.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
What do you think to that place?
It was wicked. It was smaller than I thought, which I don't mean not dissing it. But after some, I think the new one, Apex, must be way, they've got way more potential.
The Apex is the building next door to the PI, which I'm...
Is it there now? It's the new one they built now where they have Contender Series and all that stuff.
Yeah, I didn't have a look around. The Shanghai Institute's open now.
Is that okay?
Which is 4 times the size.
Okay, it was sick though. Mm. It was they had everything, but it was one of everything, and obviously that now they've got, they're still growing. Because it's a bit tough if you've how many people can really train there at the same time when there's a lot of testosterone and stuff, and you've got one hydraulic chamber or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But I love the cold pool next to the, and for me, I'm really grateful I got to go. It was a guy, Anthony, I forget his name. He was one of the directors on the Embedded series.
Right.
And he got me in. But that is just legendary to me from the build-up of Conor versus It was probably Mayweather, to be fair. Mm-hmm. He was training there for the Mayweather one, wasn't he?
He had his canvas down on the boxing ring upstairs. McGregor Promotions or whatever.
Yeah, and all that, the footage of that, and in the changing rooms with the nice wooden panelled lockers and in the ice water and that. Yeah, it's nice, man. The UFC have got a great product.
Like, yeah.
And to see them still expanding it, it's exciting.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good chat, man.
Yeah.
I'm hungry. I'm ready for some food.
Are you? Yeah. What are you feeling?
I could eat, I don't know, tandoori chicken.
Yeah, that Indian.
Yeah, man.
Cool. Awesome.
Wicked. Sorry.
Yeah. You're okay.